Hello. This is Cindy Fowler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Triangle Gardener Magazine, the North Carolina State Extension Gardener, the Garden Smart e-newsletter, and maybe from Great Gardening Gizmos by Rodale. A Most Exciting Superfood by Natalie Carmoli. Are you familiar with edible honeysuckle? If not, maybe you've heard of hascaps, honeyberries, or sweetberry honeysuckle. They are basically all the same thing, and they are quickly becoming North America's most exciting new superfruit. Why superfruit? The edible honeysuckle berry is high in antioxidants, even more so than blueberries, but don't be confused. Although some tend to think it is part of the blueberry family, it is actually more closely related to the flowering shrub, fragrant honeysuckle. Edible honeysuckle berries have their own unique taste, color, and texture. The oblong-shaped fruits have a taste that has been described as tart/sweet, and they are very juicy. Their dusty blue skin is quite thin and dissolves in your mouth unnoticed, and they have very tiny, indistinguishable seeds. This makes the tiny superfruit a great treat eaten fresh or cooked into jams, fruit pies and relishes, or used as topping on ice cream and yogurt. They can also be used to make juice or distilled into wine and spirits. The best part about this plant, though, is how easy it is to grow and maintain. Anyone can grow this shrub. Unlike blueberry plants, it does not require any special soil or pH to grow successfully. The fruit ripens in early summer, a little earlier than strawberries, depending on your region, and are easy to pick. Unlike blackberries and raspberries, the plants have no thorns. There is a wide range of bitterness and sweetness, depending upon the cultivar you grow. Tartness can be largely eliminated if you understand how to identify ripe fruit. Just because the fruit turns blue does not mean it's time to pick it. The fruit is ripe if you can easily remove it from the stem without tugging. If there is resistance, wait until it falls easily into your hand. Otherwise, you may be disappointed with the taste. Since the fruit is so tender, some find the easiest method of harvesting is to place a tarp under the bush and shake the branches. The ripe fruit will easily fall off. The Lonicera caerulea habit is generally tall and rounded. There are dwarf varieties that will reach just 4 feet. But most will grow 5 to 7 feet tall at maturity. Bushes are drought-tolerant, well-behaved, and need little to no pruning as they mature. However, since these plants tend to grow close to the ground, some may wish to prune bottom branches as the bushes mature to simplify fruit harvesting. North America. Selections brought here from Russia and the Czech Republic are often called honeyberries. The name hascap is one of several names that have been attributed to the Japanese subspecies. 4 hascap selections are available from Proven Winners Color Choice, sold under the names Yezberry, Yezberry. The advantage of the pure Japanese hascap is that the fruit is larger and the plants bloom later. The flowers appear as much as 4 to 6 weeks later than Eastern European varieties, making them less susceptible to frost damage, more attractive to pollinators, and better suited to warmer climates. Yesberry, Maxi, and Solo are excellent plants for professional fruit growers. Yesberry, Sugar Pie, and Honey Bunch are more compact and better for homeowners. All varieties of edible honeysuckle have few known pests and are largely deer resistant. As with most plants that produce berries, birds are the most challenging pest as they will readily eat the ripe berries. With the exception of Yesberry Solo, edible honeysuckle plants require a pollinizer or another type of berry bush for fertilization. As a general rule of thumb, you need one pollinizer plant for every 5 plants to be pollinated. When purchasing, ask your salesperson or garden professional which plants can be used for this purpose. The future for edible honeysuckle is bright. Cold hardy and easy to grow, the fruit has higher levels of vitamins C, A, and E than an orange, and 3 times the antioxidant level of blackberries. New breeding and the introduction of new cultivars have brought us better tasting, sweeter, and larger berries, and plants with wider adaptability and higher yields. Best of all, it's just good fun to grow fresh, tasty fruit at home that does not require special care, soil amendments, or pesticides. When properly maintained, edible honeysuckle plants can provide a lifetime of delicious and nutritious fruit harvests. Now from the North Carolina State Extension Gardener, Smart Gardening. How to grow shiitake mushrooms. Grow these tasty fungi in February through early April. Begin with a purchased kit or start from scratch. Either way, you can easily create an environment at your house to produce shiitakes. Many homeowners start by purchasing quality mushroom spawn from mushroom suppliers or seed companies. The spawn is sold in a sawdust form or as plugs. To grow shiitake mushrooms, you must have one key ingredient, fresh cut logs, preferably either red or white oak. You should cut them no more than 2 weeks prior to inoculating them with the mushroom spawn. The logs need be no more than 4 feet long and 8 inches in diameter. Once the logs are cut and ready, you need a few tools to create a shiitake log, a power drill, a mushroom drill bit, an inoculation tool, a wax melting pot, and a wax applicator. Using the power drill and mushroom bit, drill into the logs, making holes every 4 to 5 inches. Then pack the holes with sawdust mushroom spawn. Finally, seal the holes with melted cheese wax. Once you've inoculated the logs, place them in a shaded area where the logs will receive moisture. Stack the logs in either a crib or a lean-to format. The shiitake mushrooms will take 6 months to a year to fruit, so don't be in a hurry. And food production. Blueberry basics. Blueberry plants are finding their way into more homeowner yards and landscapes because of the berry's nutritional value and ease of production in North Carolina. Here are some basics to consider before adding blueberry plants to your landscape. Blueberries require well-drained, acidic soils to be productive. Test the soil prior to planting. Blueberries do best when the soil pH is between 4.5 and 5.3. If the soil pH is higher than 5.3, lower the pH by adding acidifying organic matter, such as pine bark, aged sawdust, or peat moss. If the pH is over 6.3, you may need to add elemental sulfur to the soil to bring the pH of the soil down more quickly. If the soil pH is basic, meaning a pH of 7.0 or more, then raised beds filled with acidic planting material will be the best option. In the North Carolina Piedmont, however, the soil pH is rarely above 7.0. Blueberries also require well-drained soils, which are not usually found in the North Carolina Piedmont unless you live in the sand hills. Adding organic matter when planting blueberry plants will lower the pH and improve drainage in the heavy clay predominant in the Piedmont. If blueberries are planted in a wet area, they will not produce fruit reliably and may eventually die. Here are some tips and tasks. Sharpen and sanitize garden pruning tools for any roses or fruit tree and shrubs you need to prune. Pick a sunny day for pruning activities to prevent the introduction of diseases. Begin a growing season spray program for fruit trees, shrubs, and roses. Hand pull lingering winter annual weeds such as henbit, Carolina geranium, speedwell, and chickweed from ornamental beds before they set seed. Clean up any lingering leaves and dead plant material and refresh mulch in planting beds for a clean slate. Prune spring flowering shrubs such as azaleas, forsythia, and viburnum after they have finished blooming for the season. During April, apply grub controls to lawns to manage the Japanese beetle population and prevent mole issues in the coming months. And incredible edibles, culinary herbs. Use herbs to perk up dishes and add flavors that transform a simple meat or vegetable into something special. Herbs are generally easy to grow and have few pests and diseases. They require full sun, good drainage, and very little maintenance to thrive, and can be easily grown in containers or in the ground. To harvest herbs for cooking, cut or pick them in the morning after dew has dried. They can then be used fresh, like basil for bruschetta, or they can be dried, like rosemary, to be used throughout the year. To dry, hang bunches indoors in a dry place, like an attic, and cover with a paper bag to prevent dust from accumulating. Also, avoid hanging in the sun, which spoils color and dissipates oils. Once dry and brittle, store in an airtight container. Use herbs in teas, oils, salts, vinegars, or individually to add a kick to any meal. Now from the Triangle Gardener magazine, small flowered camellias. Camellias evoke the image of large, double-flowered blooms, but there are other garden-worthy types to consider. In particular, cluster-flowered camellias produce a profusion of small flowers and resemble a cherry tree or azalea bush when in full bloom. In the wild, there are many species of camellias that produce small flowers. Almost all of these are white-flowered and are characterized by having multiple buds at each node and producing buds all along the stems. Species such as Camellia transnoconensis, C. lutyensis, and C. eucyanensis, C. handelii, C. fraterna, and C. parvalimba are all wonderful garden plants, often with arcing branches that become weighed down with the numerous blooms. Although these can be very showy, they are mostly white-flowered and some have tiny flowers. So, plant breeders have crossed these species with larger pink and red-flowered camellias to produce hybrids such as Crimson Candles, Minato no Akebono, Yume, Sweet Jane, Japanese Fantasy, Spring Mist, Vernal Breeze, and Spring Awakening. Crimson Candles is the epitome of a cluster-flowered camellia because of the amount of blooms. It is outstanding in other ways as well. The tips of the buds start showing red in late fall and are like small candles until they bloom around Valentine's Day. The flowers open to an intense cerise color with small single flowers up and down the stems. Interestingly, the parentage is C. fraterna and C. radiculata, which has the largest flowers of any camellia. The plant grows vigorously and will become 10 feet tall and 6 feet wide in about 10 years. It can be used as a focal point or even as a hedge since it has such a rapid growth. This camellia has survived many winters with temperatures of zero disease. Minato no Akabona has a sweet fragrance which comes from the C. lachensis parent. The flowers are single and range from a deep mauve to almost white at the center of the flower. Fragrance is rare in camellias, but this is one of the more strongly scented varieties. Although you still have to stick your nose into the flower to get the fragrance, this upright growing plant is hardy to zone 7B. Plant this one near a pathway or door so you'll be reminded to smell the pretty little flowers. Yum is a fall bloomer and a little different because the flowers tend to cluster at the tips of the branches. Sometimes there are as many as 20 buds at the tip of a branch, which allows this one to bloom over a very long period. The flowers are very unusual because the petals look like they alternate between white and pink. The unusual bicolor pattern is a surprise, as neither parent has the color pattern. One parent is the white-flowered C. eusiniensis, and the other parent is the pink-flowered C. sesequa shishigashira. Seedlings of the plant sometimes have the bicolor pattern and often have the heavy blooming habit. Dream Quilt is one seedling with unusual petals that curl to create space between the petals. While most cluster-flowered camellias are single-flowered, Sweet Jane is a formal double flower. Each flower is a miniature camellia bloom in light pink shading deeper at the edge of the blooms. These blooms are probably the best ones of this group for cutting, as they will last longer than most. The double C. japonica debutante was crossed with C. transnocensis to obtain this unique plant. When you want some bright color in the garden, try some of the cluster-flowered camellias. The mass bloom gives a different aspect to camellias. You will be pleased with the burst of color on a bleak, wintry day. And this article was by David Parks. Here are some growing tips. Small-flowered camellias are easy to grow and are generally more sun-tolerant than Camellia japonica. They can be used as specimen plants where a burst of color is needed. The bright colors can be seen from a long distance away because of the profusion of flowers. Some of the fastest-growing varieties, such as Crimson Candles, Spring Festival, and Japanese Fantasy, can be used for screening or hedges. Remember to prune camellias just after bloom so you don't cut off the flowers for next year. And for some upcoming events, a photography walk, April the 25th, from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Learn about creative camera techniques, like long exposure camera movements and multiple exposures, then we'll practice these new techniques in the Arboretum. There is a fee and you need to pre-register. This happens at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum at NC State University in Raleigh. Call 919-515-3132. 919-515-3132 for more information. And Lunchbox Talk, Contact with Nature, April the 25th, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Join the co-founders of NC State University's Natural Learning Initiative for this talk on how being in contact with nature broadens children's play and learning experience. It's free. Pre-registration is required. Call 919-962-0522. 919-962-0522. And this will happen at the North Carolina Botanical Garden, located in Chapel Hill. Flowers After Hours Tour and Workshop, April the 25th, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Enjoy the flowers at Duke Gardens on a docent-led tour. And end the tour at a workshop with herbalist Hannah Popish, who will discuss herbs, herbal uses, and their healing properties. There's a fee, and you need to pre-register. This happens at the Sarah P. Duke Gardens in Durham. Call 919-668-1707. 919-668-1707 for more information. And there's an Herb Fest on May the 4th from 9 a.m. until 3 p.m. Buy herbs and plants, visit a craft booth, and enjoy the gardens. And this happens at Paige Walker Arts and History Center, located in Cary, and it's free. Now some great gardening gizmos by Rodale. Welcome not mats for slugs. Discourage slugs in the garden by sprinkling red cedar shavings, the kind used for hamster litter around your plants. According to Carol Carpenter Russell, teacher and gardener of Union City, Tennessee, they hate crawling over the cedar. I've found a successful and inexpensive way to discourage slugs, says Caroline Whitenack of Doylestown, Pennsylvania. I take a bucket of builder's sand to the garden with me when I'm transplanting. When I set each plant into the ground, I use an old laundry scoop to distribute sand around the base of each small plant. Slugs won't crawl over the sharp sand. Fly sucker. White flies getting in your face? Try busting them away with your battery-operated vacuum cleaner, suggests Thea Steinmintz, a scented geranium lover in Cleveland, Ohio. White flies love geraniums, so when they get to be a bother, Steinmintz simply shakes the stem of each plant with one hand to stir up the flies and sucks them up with her handheld vacuum cleaner. Within 3 to 4 days, the fly population plummets, and the plants go outside for a good hosing down. The result? No more white flies. And a vinegar dunk for Japanese beetles. Japanese beetles can be a real menace to roses, corn, raspberries, and many ornamentals. For short-term control, hand-picking is the safest and most effective measure. To make the job easier, place cans of vinegar solution, equal parts apple cider vinegar and water, next to vulnerable plants. Early and late in the day, when beetles are sluggish, hold the can under the beetles and knock them into the solution. Vinegar kills them quickly, but is not harmful to kids or pets. Leave the can in place until it's full. Then empty dead bugs into the compost pile and refill the cans. This is a great job for youngsters eager to earn vacation money. Over time, hand-picking can reduce beetle problems significantly. And plastic cutworm collars. Clear plastic 12 to 16-ounce water or soda bottles make very effective cutworm barriers, according to Irv Breber of Pensilum, Pennsylvania, and they don't show from a distance. Just slice plastic bottles into 3-inch high rings, then press the rings about 1 inch into the soil over newly planted seedlings. Midi greenhouses. Put small seed trays filled with sterile potting soil and your seeds inside opaque plastic sweater boxes. Water from below, close the lid, and set the boxes in a warm place until the seeds germinate. Then, put the opened box under a set of fluorescent shop lights and watch the seeds grow. And a raised bed brick planter. Dyed-in-the-wool gardeners like to squeeze out as much growing season as they can. To do just that, Marina of Lansdale, Pennsylvania, combines a raised bed cold frame with bricks to cheat the cold weather. Marina fills the frame with leftover bricks, the kind with 3 holes in them, spacing the bricks 2 inches apart. She pushes the bricks into the soil until the soil level is flush with the top of the bricks. Then she plants seeds in each hole and in the 2-inch spaces between the bricks. The bricks warm up quickly and make perfect seed flats. During the day, the sun warms the bricks, which retain some of that heat during cold nights. Marina's brick trick helps her get an early jump on spring, starting zinnias and other semi-hardy plants this way. In about 2 weeks, or when the seedlings are about 2 inches high, she gently lifts the bricks and pushes seedlings out of their holes for transplanting. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until the next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.